Okay, we're holding top line of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, top line. Continuing on the topic, today we'll finally finish with it, of the crossing of the Yarden and Har Gerizim and Har Ebal. Goyrei continues the Braisa, this long Braisa, this perek of Tosefta that we've been quoting off and on for the last couple of days. Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, top line. Come look how many nisim happened on that day. Over Yisrael of the Yarden, the Jewish people crossed the Yarden, which itself was a mess, the splitting of it, as we talked about the other day. They came, according to the opinion of this Braisa, on that day they came to Hagruzim and Harevo, which is a 60 mil journey. So we talked the other day. We talked the other day, the opinions of Rabbi Huda versus Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, was it that Har Gerizim and Har Ebal are artificial nouns near the Yarden, or is it the geographical Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, which are far inland, near Shechem? In which case, according to this Braisa over here, they did it all the same day. Even though... About 40 miles each way. The Pasuk puts the whole thing in Har Gerizim and Har Ebal afterwards. You have the crossing of the Yarden in Yeshua Peret Galad, and then you have several other events before they finally get to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal at the end of Peret Ches. But according to our Braisa over here, it all happened the same day in Mukdam Mavocha Batarda. We learned the other day, Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, that they only did the Berachos and Kolos and Har Ebal after the 14 years of conquest. Anyway. Not one person was able to stand in their way to prevent them from going. And if anybody did try standing in their way, he would soil himself. He'd lose control of his bowels from fright. As the Pasuk says, I say, Mosi Ashalach Lefanecha, the Ebishter says, I will send my terror before you. The Hamoisius Kalama Shatalar Behavagamer, and I will confuse all the people among who you come. So Rashi explains, the Hamoisius Lashon Mahuma V'Irbu Aguf U'Masha B'Sefer, like mixing up, and then like mixing up and shaking up what's inside the body. So therefore, like their intestines got all mixed up and whatever.
No,
Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that Hamoisi does not mean I'll kill, because then the word would be behemati. Hamoisi is Meloshin Mishram Lashavish. Hamam, Mahuma, which means to confuse. Okay, we're not in class on distance over here, but that's how it is. You can look at it's a pasuk in Mishpatim. You can look at the Rashi over there. Okay, but Omer, and you have another pasuk that expresses the same idea. Tipol aleim amosav afachad. There should fall on the surrounding nations fear and terror. Ad yaver am, and the pasuk continues. Ad yaver amcha Hashem, until your people pass over Hashem. Now we have a double expression. We say every day in davening when we have a double expression of it. Ad yaver amcha Hashem. Ad yaver am zukaniso. So why the double expression? Ad yaver amcha Hashem zubir rishon. This refers to the first time they came into Eretz Yisrael when they crossed the Yarden. Ad Yaver Am Zukonisa Zubia Shnia.
No,
there were. Ad Yaver Am Zukonisa Zubia Shnia. When they came back in the times of Ezra to rebuild the second Mishmikdash, that's also called Ad Yaver. And in fact, Maharsha brings a pasuk from Nehemiah, where Nehemiah describes that his journey to Eretz Yisrael. He describes the Ad Asher Ever, that I'm recrossing over. Ad Asher Yaviru. Yeah, so then it's called Zubia Rishon and Biashnia. So what do we see from that? We see, based on the implication of that pasuk, that we're comparing, hello, that we're comparing Ad Yaver Am Hashem the first time and Ad Yaver Am Zukanisa the second time. Based on that, Emer Me'ata, Ru'uyin Hoye Yisrael Lassus Lem Nest V'yachniya Kibirushayna. By rights, the Jewish people should have had that there would be a nest happen to them the second time around, like there was the first. The first time, we just said all the Goyim were terrified of them. Nobody could stand in their way. The second time, we know it was very much not like that. The Goyim were harassing them. They got the Bismikdash, the building of the Bismikdash stopped for years. Afterwards, when they were building the walls of Yerushalayim, they had to literally be building with one hand and holding swords with the other hand. By rights, they should have had, since the Pasuk is putting them together, they should have had the same net the second time around as the first time. Elo should go to Machet. But the Chet that they did prevented it. What Chet? Not the Chet. No, so wait. Rashi says that the chet we're talking about is the chet. So Rashi says the chet of Yisrael and Bais. Can I explain? Let me talk, please. Let me finish a sentence. Rashi says the chet we're talking about over here is the chet of the times of Bais Rishon. So meaning, in other words, that chet still, even though the Beis Mikdash, the first Beis Mikdash had been destroyed and had been in a 70-year Golos, apparently the after effects of it still lasted. Having said that, though, other Mepharshim learn that the correct Girsay and Rashi should be the Chet of Bayis Sheni, in which case, what was the Chet of Uri and the Bayis Sheni? We know from the Pesukim, particularly in Sefer Ezra, the big problem then was intermarriage. Relatively speaking, it wasn't that many. The Pesukim only lists about 100 people, but still, that there were people who were getting involved with and marrying Goyish a woman. That's the Chet we're talking about then, according to that. That prevented that they didn't have the nest by Biashnir. Marshal gives a different explanation, not over here, but in Yuma, because the Gemara has the same discussion. In Yuma, Marshal explains that the chet of the second time around is that not all the Jewish people came back. We know from the Pesukim in Ezra and in Nehemiah that about 40,000 odd Jews came back, but the rest of them all stayed behind in Babel. That was the chet that we're talking about. Were it not for that, had they all come back together, then they would have had the Nisim that they had the first time around.
Why do we know it's a chet?
What do we know? It's a chet. What? To marry Goyish a woman? To not come back?
Yeah.
Okay, but still, first of all, the Nevi'im are all telling them to leave. I see any multi Yeshevet Bas Babel. There's various psukim that the Nevi'im are telling them. And besides which, the whole idea is that Kodesh is proclaiming, Mibachem Mekol Amei V'Yal, whoever wants to go should go. So what are people staying behind for? And in fact, the Gemara in Yoma mentions that Rish Lakish used to say, even hundreds of years later, that I really resent the Bavliim. He said, you know, if you guys had all come up together when you were supposed to, then we would have had a permanent second. Then the second Bismuth would have been a permanent one. We wouldn't have had to have another Churban and another Golos and everything. So it's all your fault, basically, he says. Continues the Braisa. After they got to Hagrizim and Harevel, they took the stones that they brought over, that they brought up from the Yardin and brought over there. Ubonuathan Mizbeach, they built the Mizbeach, as the Pasuk says, and then Kisavot, Vesaduhu, they plastered it, Vesaduhu Basid, they plastered it with plaster or lime, as we talked about yesterday, because they wrote on the stones all the words of the Torah in 70 languages, Shanema Bar Hetiv, as it says, clearly explained. So we said the other day that clearly explained means explained in every single language, and we have to talk about how from the word Hetiv you derive the Gematria 70. We talked the other day, there's a number of different opinions among the Rishonim, that Ramban takes the view that it means literally the entire Torah, including all the tagim and everything. So it was Maisa Nifa, forget that. So, I mean, there's also the fact, never mind that, there's how much, even if these were very large stones, how much room do you have to write the entire, okay, so it was Maisa Nifa. So that's one. There's other possibilities. There are other Rishonim, so if we say that it was the whole Torah and 70 languages, then it was Maisa Nifa. There's other possibilities. There are Rishonim who say that it was just a list of the 613 mitzvahs. There are Rishonim who say that it was just a summary of the Torah, kind of, or the parts of the Torah that talk about, remember, this was mainly addressed to the Goyim. So it could have been mainly the parts of the Torah that talk about how Eretz Yisrael comes to be ours, the various promises that the Eved gave the Jewish people, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Mount Torah, etc. There's this whole thing about the plaster. We talked yesterday. We had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon whether they wrote the words of the Torah on the stones and then coated the stones with plaster with lime, or was it the other way around? They put the lime on them and they wrote on top of it. So our b'raisa over here. So Marsha points out actually our b'raisa could go either way. It says they plastered them and then they wrote the words of the Torah. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that means a face value. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would say the plastering means when they built the mizbeach, they had to put plaster between the rows of stone to hold it together. Ochlu v'shosu v'samchu, they ate and drank, v'helu oilus v'shlomim, they brought oilus v'shlomim, v'ochlu v'shosu v'samchu, and they ate and drank and were happy, as the Pasuk says, v'achalta shlomim v'zavachta shlomim v'achalta shlomim v'samachta, l'fnei Hashem alekecha. That's actually, in fact, the Pasuk from where we learn that ein simcha ela b'basar, the whole concept that we know, the samachta v'chagecha, means eating meat, we learn from that Pasuk. Then they did the bracha to kolos. Okay, there's a different gears over here, not the kilalu, but rather that uberuchu means they benched birkas amazin. No. Samachta means the samachta is the simcha of eating meat. The beruchu of kilalu, according to the gears that we have, means they announce the brachas and kolos on hagrizim, nareva, like they're supposed to. According to the other gears, say it's not the kilalu. Uberuchu doesn't mean the bracha to kolos because that would have been before they built the mizbeach. Rather, it would mean they benched. After they ate, they benched. As a matter of Well, the chiddush of it would be, we know there's four brachas in benching. The first one was composed by Moshe when the man started falling. The second one, it says, was in Shulchan Aruch, and the Gemara was composed by Yeshua when they came into Eretz Yisrael. This is, on this occasion, on Har Gerizim, and Har Ebal is where, for the first time ever, they benched the second bracha of benching, which Yeshua had composed.
So what do we see that's just thus far?
Because that's what they ate. That's what they did. They brought shlomim and they ate them. And the pasuk says it's a machta. So from there we learn that simcha is by eating meat. No, well, so okay. There is a discussion among the poskim whether when we say whether ain simcha of a baster, does it mean specifically a baster of shlomim, or is it more generally baster? Again, nowadays, I mean, so nowadays, I mean, mekayim simchas yomtov just by eating meat when we don't have shlomim. Okay. So according to what it's saying over here, yes. But the other possibility is we could say that the chaswal lehem doesn't mean on the stones of the mizbeach, but rather on the stones that they brought over from Gilgal. And in fact, Tosfos mentions well, we're going to say that in a second. But yeah, actually, Tosfos quotes over here from the Tosefta that leaves out the words of the chaswal of the Torah. That actually, according to the original Tosefta, that they were not listing the fact that they wrote the Torah because they didn't write it on the Mizbeach. They wrote it on the stone that they brought from Gilgal.
And they left it there.
And they left it there with Hashem. Yeah. Continues the Bereis. So the Kiplu Asav on him. Then they peeled off the plaster from the stone. It actually explains the. They peeled off the lime, the plaster from the stones. Gilin Ashaster, the Kid Eger, says that the kikler was like the word to kill food. They peeled off. Ubo, and I suppose also add the idea that the kikler of Savonim also means they took apart the stones. Ubo, Valonu Gilgal, and then they came back and camped there the night in Gilgal. Shenema, as the pasuk says, we quoted this before, Vahavata Moshe Mimachem, you should take along these stones. The Nacht Moshe Mamolin, and you should place them in the lodging place. So, Yachal B'chamolin Mamolin, does that mean they have to carry them to place where they camp in Eretz Yisrael? No, Asher Chalunu Vahamad Loima, Asher Chalunu Vahalayla, the one that you're going to camp in tonight. Remember, the Braitha is saying all this happened on the same day. So in Gilgal, they crossed the Yarden on Yudnissin. All the rest of the stuff happened the rest of that day, Yudnissin. That night, the night from going into Yudnissin, is the first time they camped in Gilgal, and then they set up these stones over there. Uchdiv, and the pasuk says, Shemer Esther Avonim Eil HaShalach HaVogim, and these 12 stones that they took out of the Yarden, Yeshua set them up in Gilgal. So the point is, in other words, according to what the Braitha is saying over here, they set them up first on Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, and then they took them apart and reset them up in Gilgal, and that's where they remained. All the same size. I don't know. The Gemara had said the other day that each one of them was at least 40 saw in size. But yeah, okay. Yeah. Another thing, talking about the crossing over into Eretz Yisrael. So in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah tells us, after that pasuk that we quoted before, say, Mosi Ashalach Lafanecha, the Hamoitius Kolam, the next pasuk tells us, V'shalachti Yisat Sir Olafanecha. That the Eibishter says, I will send the Tzira before you, and it will clear out the Chivi, the Knani, and the Chivi from your presence. Tzira means a hornet, like a stinging insect.
Yeah.
So in what way does that clear them out? So the pasuk says, first of all, we learn in a braisa, Tzira over imahem. This Tzira did not pass over the Yarden with them. When we're saying that there was a Tzira, it was on Evra Yarden. It helped clear out the enemies on that side, the land of Sichon and Og. The question is, Valoi, you're telling me that not, that it didn't cross? The pasuk says, I will send the tzira before you, and it'll clear out the goyim. And in particular, Marsha talks about the idea among the nations that it mentions over here, the chivi, at the very least, the chiti, actually, the third one on the list, on the face of it, are only on the west side of the Yarden. Where do we find Bnei Ches earlier in the Torah? We find them in Hebron, where Avraham brought them as Machpelah from them. We find Esav marrying one of them. That's all on the west side of the Yarden. Why should we assume, if the pasuk is telling us that the job of the Tzira is to get rid of, among others, the Chiti, then why would it stay on the east side of the Yarden? No, what happened was Alfas Yarden Omda, this Tzira, whether it was one, whether it was a whole swarm, whatever, stayed by the bank of the Yarden. Attacker did not cross over. The Zorkaban Mora, it shot poison at the Knanim. The Simata Enehen Milamaila, the Siratin Milamata. It blinded their eyes. And it made them infertile. It impaired their fertility. milamata, from underneath. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Va'anochi shmati etzai murder b'pneim." The Eibishter says hundreds of years later to the Navi Omers that look, why are the Jewish people being so ungrateful and worshiping idols and whatever, and then doing other avodas? Don't they remember that I destroyed the Emori from their presence? Asher kegoyva arozim gavoy. These Emorim, they were as tall as cedar trees, chosin hu kaloyim, and they were as stout, as strong as oak trees. And I destroyed their fruit from above and their roots from below. What? Yeah, that's what we're saying. So the period then represents, period represents that it made them blind on above. So it's because the eyes are high up on the body. And Marshall explains that the eyes can be called peiros because we say the person's avodas develops primarily from their eyes. The person sees something with their eyes and then that develops eventually into peiros of avodas, where actual avodas come out of it. And Shadosh of Milotacha says roots from below, because roots are what a tree grows from, and therefore it represents their organs that they would have children with, which Sirastam, that it castrated them. Maharal actually explains the other way around. Maharal has an interesting explanation. He says that if we say Ki Adam Eitz Hadada, a person is actually like an upside-down tree. Their roots, I mean, their head is their roots, because that's the primary part of a person, and closer to Shemayim, a person's roots are on top, and their fruit is on bottom, because the organs of generation are towards the bottom of the body. So therefore, it's the other way around. The period mimal refers to the ability to have children, and the sharosha milatachas refers to blinding them in their head, which is more like the root of the body.
But the eyes are
connected with the brain, right? Okay, but more so than others. In fact, Ben Yehuda talks about also there's a connection in Tanya and in many places in the cities. You talk about Ben Nimshach Memorach Ha'ar. There is a certain direct connection between the brain and the Aver. So the point is that yes, the Tzira did not actually cross over the Yarden with them, but it was still able to clear out the Chivi, the Knani, and the Chivi on the west side of the Yarden from a distance. Rapapa, I'm no Shtei Tzira Savoy. No, there were two Tziras. Chavad the Moshe, Chavad the Yeshua. One from Moshe Rabbeinu's time, the other from Yeshua's time. The Moshe lay over, the Yeshua over. The one from Moshe did not cross over. That one helped clear out the lands of Sichon Og, of their original inhabitants. And the other one, then there was another one that crossed over with them, that crossed the Yarden with Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people, and cleared out the Canaanim on the other side. Okay. So now we finally get to how Grizim and how Abel. Back to our Mishnah now that we're finished with the Braisa. Our Mishnah had told us at the beginning of the Perek, Shisha Shvatim Olu L'Rosh HaGrizim, six Shvatim went up to HaGrizim, six went up to HaRevel, and the Kohenim and Levim stood in the middle with the Oren, and they announced the Brachas of Flawless. So we're going to go into now the details of how it was set up. Now the Pasuk in Sefer Yoshua, where it describes how they did it, it says that chetzia yomul hagrizim, half of them are facing hagrizim, v'ha chetzia and v'ha elmul har evil, are opposite or facing har evil. The my v'ha chetzia, what does that expression v'ha chetzia mean? V'ha chetzia with the hey means either there's something special, either it has to mean something, there's something special about that half, or that half, or it means the half which is already know about that half as being a defined unit from someplace else. So where do we find now the pasuk lists that the pasuk lists the shvatim on the respective mountains? What was it? You had Reuven, Gad, Asher, Zvulun, Dan, and Naphtali on Har Eivol, and Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin, I think, on Har Grizim. So what was it? Amar Avkana, Kederach Shechalukin Kan, Kachalukin Ba'avne Eifoi. The same way they were divided over here, the same six and six division, is the same division on the stones of the Eifoi. The Eifoi had the Kohen Gadol wore, it had two stones, two Shayam stones on the two shoulders of it. Each one was inscribed with the name of six of the Shvatim. So Avkana is saying the same idea as we have here, that six Shvatim, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. are on Havrizim, and the other six, Reuven, God and Asher and so forth are on Har Eivol. The same division was on the two respective stones. Maybe the Gemara says I have a contradiction. A Braisa describes it. Shtei Avonim Tovos the Kohen Gadol Ksefer. The Kohen Gadol had two precious stones on his shoulders, Achas Mikan Vachas Mikan, one on each side. Ushmois Shneim Osa Shvatim Kotvaleim, and the names of the 12 Shvatim were written on them. Shishal Evanzu Vashishal Evanzu, six on each one, six on one, six on the other. Fine, so far so good, that doesn't contradict your Kana. Shneim, well, that's the Pasuk says. Shishim Ushmois and Alevan Achas Ugamer. Now, the Pasuk says it like this. Shishim Ishmois and Alevan Achas, six of the remains on one stone. The Eshmois Hashisha Anisorim, and the names of the remaining six, Alo Evan Ashenis, are on the second stone, Kitol Doisam, according to their Tolis. Now, what does according to their Tolis mean? The Gemara is assuming, the Braise is assuming, the Tanakama here, the Braise is assuming that it means according to the order in which they were born. But Shnia Kitol Doisam, Velo Rashona Kitol Doisam. The implication of the passage is only on the second stone were they written in the order of their birth. In the first stone, they were not.
What order were they written?
That's what we're going to say. So, the second one was written according to the order of their birth, the order of their age, but not the first one. Because on the first one, yes, you have the six shvatim. On the other one, that the six that are on the first stone, instead of putting Reuven first, Yehuda is first. The Chamishim Oisiyah tell you, and continues the Braisa altogether in the names of the Shvatim, there were 50 letters. Esrim B'chomesh Al-Evan Zu, Esrim B'chomesh Al-Evan Zu. There were 25 letters then on each stone. That's how the Tanakhama says it.
So Reuven wasn't the first one?
Well, no, we'll get to in a minute how this Braisa contradicts Rav Kana, but wait. So far what we have is, the Braisa is saying the way they divided it is that, at least on the face of it, what the Braisa is saying, on the first stone, they have the first six Shvatim to be born, which is Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Dan, Naphtali. Then on the other one, he had the next six that were born in order. God, Asher, Yisachar, Zvulun, Yosef, and Yamin. Except the Braisa is saying on the first stone, instead of putting them in the order, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, the order was Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and then Dan and Naphtali. So far that can't go according to Rav Kahana, because that's not the arrangement that there was in Hagrizim. By the way, about this 25 on each stone, the Gemara is going to revisit it further on our days, but the Yerushalmi points out another possibility. Now, there's a couple of different Shvatim. There's a couple of different of the Shvatim whose names there's more than one way to spell. We'll talk about it a little more on our day. One of them is Zvulun. It can be spelt with only one of the two Vavs or with both of them. The Yamin can be spelt with one or both of the Yuds. So the Yerushalmi argues that if you go according to Rav Kahana, according to what Rav Kahana is saying in our Gemara over here, that the six who are on Har Grizim are on one stone, the six who are on Har Evel are on the other stone, if you count up the letters in the respective names, you have 23 and 27, not 25 each. So how do they do that? And the Rishami gives an interesting answer. They took the name Binyamin and split it. The word Ben was on one stone, and the word Yamin was on the other, and that made it easy. What?
Yeah.
Why not? So actually, the idea is because why was Binyamin called that? Benyamin in last week's parsha. Yaakov called him that because he's Benyamin. He's the son born on the right side, meaning on the south in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, yes, the name can be split up. It's a compound word. So therefore, it can be split up.
Okay.
So, in fact, the Yerushalmi says that's why the Pasuk says Shisha Mishmoisam, six of their names. As if to imply that there's going to be on each of the stones there's going to be some of the name. So some of the name of Binyamin is going to be on each stone along with the names of the other ones. Okay, but now our Gemara is not saying like that. Our Gemara is just saying straight out there were 25 each, and we'll talk on Amud Beis how that worked out. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, no, he says that's not the order in which the names were written on the stones, not like you're saying according to the order in which they were born. Also, they're not in the order in which they appear in Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar is called Chumash Kodim because of all the countings of the Jewish people in it. But rather, the way they're laid out, the way they're listed in the second Chumash, at the beginning of Shemos. Which is, Ketzad, how does that go? B'nei Leah to Sidron, at the beginning of Shemos, Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael Aboyim at Shem, and this is the 12 Shvatim. So it goes, the six sons of Leah are all in order, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Zachar, and Zvolun. B'nei Rochel, Echad Mekan, Ve'echad Mekan. Then, of the remaining six, you have B'nei Rochel, one at each end. After the six of Leah, in the Pesukim over there in Shemos, next one comes Binyamin. Then come the four sons of the Shvacha, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, and Yosef is listed last. Yosef, Hoyab, and Mizraim. So therefore, so that's the same order it was over here. B'nei Rachel, Echad Mikan, V'Echad Mikan. On the other side, you have the children of Rachel, one at the top, one at the bottom. B'nei Shvachas, Binyamin on the top, Yosef on the bottom. B'nei Shvachas, Bamsa, and Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher in the middle. Which actually, Marashah points out, that's meant to be complementary to Yosef. Just like in the Pesukim over there, in Shmos, it finishes off with Yosef to say that all of Yaakov's children remain tzaddikim, even the Yosef Hayyab in Mitzrayim, even Yosef had been living in Mitzrayim all these years. Similarly here, we put him at the end, as if to say that not only the 11 who stayed back home in Eretz Canaan ended up remaining tzaddikim and worthy to be listed on the Ephod, but even Yosef did too. Ella, so he continues, Mani Makayim Ketodoy. Some sort of Chaninim and Gamliel says, according to that, what do you mean Ketodoy? Some, if you put in Binyamin number 7 and he was born 12, so what it means is, it means Ketodoy, it doesn't mean according to the order of their birth. It means according to the names they were given at birth. Kishmos and Shekarah Lahanavian, they're listed on the stones of the Ephod using the names that their father gave them. The Loika Shemus, Shekarah Lahan Moshe, not the names that later on Moshe then gives the Shvatim in the Torah. Well, why have you not imam? Okay, I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah, considering that the mothers gave most of them their names. Okay, I don't know. So, for example, Reuven v'lo Reuveni, Shimon v'lo Shimoni, Don v'lo Hadoni, God v'lo Hagadi. So the actual name of the founder of the ancestor of the Shevet, not the name of the Shevet as a family.
That would be
Reuveni, for example. The name of the family of the Shevet as a family would be Shevet Shimoni. As opposed to Reuben or Shimon. That's what we're saying. According to Chanina ben Gamliel, that's what Ketodos means. Anyway, the point is, according to both of these opinions, neither of these opinions, and neither the Tanakhama, who says it was in the order of birth, nor of Chanina ben Gamliel, who says it's according to the order in Sefer Shmos, neither of them fits with Rav Kahana, that it goes according to the division on Hagrizim and Harevel. Tufta to Rav Kahana. So that's a contradiction to Rav Kahana. You can't argue with Tanayim. Okay, Tufta is a contradiction. By the way, as far as this whole business of how the names were laid out on the stones, the Rambam has an interesting shita in it. The Rambam paskins that what they did is they went back and forth from one stone to the other. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. According to the Tanakhama, the way we learned, it sounded like it was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. Or according to the Tanakhama, actually Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. According to the Rambam, first of all, the Rambam doesn't put Yehuda first. Second of all, he puts them alternating from stone to stone. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. So the idea is that this way, it's like both stones are being read as if it was one big stone. There's a sicha in Chelek Lamed Vav where the Rebbe analyzes the underlying reason behind that versus Rashi takes our Gemara more at face value, that it was downward on the stones, the two different kinds of actors, basically, whether you look at it, the actors of how the Jewish people all came from one source, from Yaakov Avinu, versus the actors, or do we look at the actors the way they are now, in which case you want to have like both stones are as if they were one big stone and you're just reading across the line. Okay, anyway. So the Elamai v'Achetzi. So we're back to the question then. In Sefer Yeshua, when it describes the second group of Shvatim as v'Achetzi and v'Half, if we've slugged up Rav Kahana, that doesn't mean v'Half, which all these 4 years you've been able to read off the Kohen Gadol Ephod. Then what does it mean? Tanas, we learn it right. The Chetzi shall mul Hagrizim merubim, the Chetzi shall Harevel. It means that the half of the people who are on Hagrizim is more than the half on Harevel. So in other words, when the pasuk says v'Achetzi mul Harevel, Achetzi means the smaller half. I mean, chetzi doesn't always mean necessarily 50%. It means a portion. So therefore, chetzi shevet Menashe, for example, wasn't exactly half of the shevet mathematically, even the portion of it. So the same thing over here. Ha chetzi means the smaller portion was on Harevel. The larger portion was on Hagrizim. Because Levi was down below. They weren't on either mountain. The question is, they were on the contrary. The fact that Levi is below should mean that Levi is one of the six Shvatim who's supposed to be on Hagrizim. If you're telling me that Levi is not on Hagrizim, they're in the valley, then you only have five, complete Shvatim on Hagrizim. Then the number on Hagrizim is going to be a lot smaller. No, what it means is, even though Levi was below in the valley, but because Yosef is one of the other six Shvatim on Hagrizim, therefore that counterbalanced all of the Leviim who were down below. Now, it wasn't
in the valley.
So it wasn't all the Levim, actually. What it is Tosfos has a long discussion about an Amanah. Before we talked about in the Mishnah. We said that the Zkenim of the Kohenim and Levim, the elder Kohenim and Levim, were in the valley. The younger Levim and Kohenim, I guess, were on Hagridim together as representing Shevet Levi. What we're saying is, even though you have only part of Shevet Levi is on the mountain, part of them are in the valley, nevertheless, because Shevet Yosef is also on that mountain, and Shevet Yosef was large, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, therefore that counterbalance that it makes more people on Grizim than on Abel.
That's
the point. When we say Bahachetir, it means the half on Har Abel means the small.
I understand, yeah. But it was a question of space?
It's not a question of space. No, it's just that's the way the Abishah said to do it.
Oh.
Doesn't say, but I guess the idea is you have to have somebody with the Orin. The Orin has to be in the middle. You can't just leave it abandoned, you know. Tosfos on Omer Aleph has there was a Zikne Kohenim and Levim. And maybe also practically speaking, the Zikne Kohenim and the Zikne Levim might have a hard time climbing up a mountain. I don't know. Tosfos has a long discussion on Omer Aleph with the mathematics of it. How exactly does it work out mathematically? If you look at the censuses of the Shvatim from Parshas Pinchas, does it come out mathematically correct that the number on Hagrizim was actually greater than Har Evel, especially once you subtract some of the Levim standing in the valley? You have to take into consideration that Shevet Shimon had a huge drop in population. Tosfos mentioned at that point, but actually that was before that census, so maybe that's so that the question is also how that comes to be relevant. But also Tosfos brings up the issue that maybe not all of Shevet Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Manasseh were there. The Pasuk in Yeshua mentions that 40,000 of them came to help in the fighting. So does that imply only 40,000 of them came and the rest of them stayed back home? Or the Rambam portion would say that no. For the fighting, yes, the Moshe didn't say they all have to come, just that enough of them have to come to help lead the people in battle. The rest of them stayed home to guard home front on Edra Yavin, but for Hagrizim and Har Evel, yeah, they all have to be there because they all have to be included in the brief. So they crossed from Edra Yavin for this, and then they went back according to that. A while back, I saw an interesting thing. Somebody wrote an article that mathematically trying to analyze things using a different set of assumptions than Tosfos is using about the population. And part of the problem is we don't know the population for Shevet Levi the way we do for the other Shevatim. Because Shevet Levi counted from a month old, and the other Shevatim are counted from 20 years old. But by doing a little bit of creative math, this guy comes up with a notion that the number on Har Abel was one more than the number on Har Grizim. And he wants to argue that therefore, since we know that Matin Leral and the Apishnayim, that when it comes to judging unfavorably, like a Sanhedrin, you need a majority of two. So therefore, putting a majority of one on Har Evel means effectively that doesn't outbalance Hagrizim. It's an interesting half. Although later on, somebody else wrote another article disproving it, pointing out that all the assumptions are a little flawed. Okay, whatever. It's an interesting little mathematical exercise.
Did you know how they calculated it?
Yeah, he has a whole calculation figuring the likely increase in population, figuring statistically how many Levim there might have been of a certain age as compared to the fact the turtle only lists the turtle lists them all from 30 days old, okay, whatever. Anyway. So what do we mean that Bnei Yosef be Mahem and therefore that made that on Hagrizim is a majority? And by the way, Tosfos also points out that the Yerushalmi says the other way around, that the Chetzer means, that on the contrary, it means that the number on Har Evel was exceeded the number on Har Grizim. The Chetzer then would mean the larger half, not like our Gemara was saying, the smaller half. Okay. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vaydabru Bnei Yosef and Yeshua Lamer, later on, the Pasuk describes, after they had conquered Eretz Yisrael and were dividing it up among the Shevatim, so the children of Yosef spoke to Yeshua. They said, Madua nasati v'nachla gerdalacha b'chevalacha. Why have you given me as an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael only one lot in the lottery, in the gerdal, and one portion? Ba'ani amra, I'm a very large people. It's not enough land for us. There's a big machlokas, by the way, between Rashi and the Ramban about the exact method in which they divided up Eretz Yisrael among the Shevatim. Is it that they divided it by the number of families? In that case, then it's easy to understand what Shevet Yosef's argument is, that we have a lot of families, but if you're dividing, no, so actually, according to, if you say, no, so rather, the Ramban says they divided Eretz Yisrael into 12 equal areas, so a Shevet that has fewer families is going to get larger plots of land. So then it's easy to understand that Bnei Yosef's complaint. We're a very large Shevet, but we have a piece of land exactly the same size as all the others. We don't have enough room. As opposed to, according to Rashi, you learn that each family got the same size plot, and therefore a larger Shevet got a larger territory, then it's a little harder to understand what their objection was. It may have been that there wasn't enough cultivable land, whatever. Anyway. Well, it was. I mean, Ephraim and Manasseh got territories of their own in Eretz Yisrael, but it was like one big territory. It was kind of like one territory that was divided in half for Ephraim and Manasseh, rather than, especially according to the Ramban, rather than being the size of two individual Shevet territories. Okay. Anyway.
But both together will count it on equal basis.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point is they're saying, Ani Amrav, I'm a numerous people, and the pasuk continues, Vayom Elohem Yeshua, Im Amrav Ata, if you're a numerous people, Alev Lecha Yara, then go up to the forest. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk is, he continues, he tells them, go up to the forest and start chopping them down to make more habitable area. Right now, there's a dense forest covering a lot of your territory, go clear it out, and then you'll have room to settle. But the Gemara is explaining what Yeshua said differently. Amalahan, he tells them, you know what, you're saying you're such a numerous people. Then you better go hide out in the forest. That an ayin hara shouldn't affect you.
Because you're
so numerous, the other Shabbatim are going to be jealous of you. Amalahan, they said, don't worry. The children of Yosef know ayin hara has any effect against them. The pasuk says, "Ben poras Yosef, ben poras alei ayin." It says, "A fruitful son is Yosef." A fruitful son, alei ayin. It literally means over the spring or over the eyes or whatever. They overpower. They're over the power of ayin hara.
Or removed from the
eye. Yeah. No, but wait. So what it is actually like this. If you look at the figures in the if you look at the figures in the census in Parshas Pinchas, it's true, Yehuda is larger. But first of all, remember you have Ephraim and Manasseh together we're talking about here. Ephraim and Manasseh together, according to the figures in that census, were more than Yehuda. But besides that also, primarily we're talking about over here, this is when they came to Yeshua with this complaint, was after they'd been conquering Eretz Yisrael for 7 years. The Gemara is going to quote now the pasuk Rabbi Yosef Achanina Amar Mehach of a Yid Galorei V'Kerav Ha'aretz, that we learned from the pasuk they'll multiply like fish in the middle of the land. Meaning, one second, Ma Dogim Shavayam Ma'im Mechas Malayim Da'in Ayin Shalachis Ben, just like fish in the sea, the water covers them over, and therefore people's eyes don't have control over them, and therefore they're not affected by Yid Zahara. Afzara Shal Yosef Ein Ayin Shalachis Ben, the same way the children of Yosef are not affected by Ayin Hara. So the idea is the Kerav Ha'aretz. Once they came into Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden, Shevet Ephraim and Shevet Manasseh started having this huge population explosion. So by the time they come to Yeshua, with this complaint, 7 years later, their population has grown. Even in Parshas Pinchas already, Ephraim and Manasseh together are bigger even than Shevet Yehuda, which is the biggest of all the Shevatim. But once they have this population explosion, even more so, and that's why they're coming and complaining to Yeshua. So over here, we're saying on how grisim and how evil, because Ephraim and Manasseh together, which count as the one Shevet Yosef for purposes of Hagrizim and Harevo, because Levi is counted as one of the Shvatim, and whenever you count Levi, you don't count Manasseh and Ephraim separately. So that alone means that there's much more people on Hagrizim, even once you subtract the Levim who stood in the valley. That's what we're saying, that they had a special bracha. In fact, by the way, when they say over here, at Koi Bechani, the Gemara doesn't quote this part of the pasuk, but they say to Yeshua, they say, Ani Am Rab, we're numerous people, Ad Asher Koi Berchani Hashem, that Hashem has benched me Koi, Kof Hei, so as such. So Bala Turim says on the Sukkim over there in Pinchas, in the second census, if you look at the figures, you find that Shevet Ephraim alone grew by 20,500 people. That's Koi, Kof Hei. Kof representing the 20,000 and Hei representing the 500. That was the largest increase of any single Shevet. In 40 years. The point is, 40 years from the first census until the second census. Yeah. If you're going to be boasting about Ani Am Rav, then yeah, you have to worry about Ayin Hara. I mean, he himself is from Shevet Yosef, but yeah. Yeah. Okay, but still, you're mentioning it, so it can be called Ayin Hara. Incidentally, by the way, the Malbim on the Pesukim over there in Yeshua says that after all, they did sort of get their way, even though Yeshua didn't enlarge their territory, but he did assign certain cities of neighboring Shvatim that they were like enclaves or exclaves, whatever you want to call them, in the territories of these other Shvatim that are going to be assigned to Ephraim and Manasseh in order to help absorb the extra population. There were a lot of enclaves and exclaves like that different Shvatim had with each other. It was a normal thing. Now, going back to the letters on the Ephod, we said there were 50 letters. So, anyway, Hani Chamishim Oseis, Chamishim Nachi Chada Avyan. If you count the numbers of the, if you count the in the Pesukim over there by Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and you count the number of letters in the Shvatim's names, you find only 49. Or not by Har Gerizim and Har Eval, rather by the list by the list, whichever list we're using for the Ephod. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Yosef Oseif Aloy Oseachas. Yes, but Yosef had another letter added to his name. Shenemar, it says in Tillim, Edus V'Yehoisef Sami V'Seif Aloy Oseachas. He made it an Edus, a testimony for Yehoisef, that he placed it when he went out on Eretz Mitzrayim, when he became the viceroy. Yehoisef is the special name of Yosef. No, so you have the extra Yud of Yehoisef, the extra Hey, I mean of Yehoisef. That's the 50th letter. So therefore, the idea would be, on the Ephod, they didn't write Yosef, they wrote Yehoisef. That's the 50th letter. Why is that way in the Chumash? I don't know. Okay, we really needed one place to learn the Drasha, but why he was called Yosef, we're going to get to in a minute. The Gemara is going to tell us the whole story. But, how do you figure? Yosef becomes Yehoisef. There's one more letter. There's one more letter. There's a Hey. No, it's not B-Yehoisef. The Bez is not part of the name. Yehoisef, yeah. And we said before the names on the Ephod have to be Ketol Doisim, the way they were born, not the names they were given when they were born. He was called Yosef when he was born, not Yehoisef. Ella, no. Rather, it's like this. Kol HaTorah Kol HaBinyamon Ksiv. Throughout the Torah, whenever it says Binyamin's name, it usually says it without it in the second Yud. V'ach Binyamin Shalim K'dichtiv of Kavala Binyamin. Here, on the Ephod, we write it Binyamin with both Yuds, the way it was when his father originally named him V'ach Kavala Binyamin in Parshas Vayishlach. So therefore, that's the 50th letter. That's the second year of Binyamin. So therefore, you have 50. So therefore, you have 50 letters, and you can have 25 on each. And there's an idea that's brought in Shach al-Torah and in other places that the 25 letters on each stone correspond to the 25 letters in Shema, and in the Pasuk Shema Yisrael, the 25 letters in Baruch Shem Kved Machos Tovah Levod. So either it corresponds respectively to Shema and Baruch Shem, or it corresponds respectively to the Shema in the morning and the Shema at night. There's a mimer of the Rebbe from back in the Chof that talks about the two possibilities over here. Incidentally, about this business of how Binyamin is spelt, the Trumas Hadeshin mentions that there's a napkamina for it in Halacha. If you have to write the name Binyamin in a get, What do you do? Do you write it with or without the Yud? Based on what we're saying over here, that usually in the Torah it's written without the second Yud, he says that it's not only in the place where he's born. Altogether, he says there's 17 places in Chumash where it's written Malid. Still, the vast majority of times it's written Chaser. So maybe in a guess it should be written Chaser, the Trumas Hadeshin says. Because that's the way it's usually written in the Torah. We're saying here by the Ephod with a special exception. However, the Ramah argues with that, and in general, the Minhag nowadays is it's written with a Yud. That's written, Binyamin is written with both Yods. Going back to that Yosef was renamed Yehoisef, Omer of Chonam Babizna, Omer of Chim Chassidah, Yosef Shekidesh Shev Shemayim Bafei, so he sees all of Oisachas Mishmer Shalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yosef was Mekadesh, the Abish's name in private, so one letter of the Abish's name was added to him. As opposed to Yehuda, Shekidesh Shem Shemayim Bafehesia, but Yehuda called Shekidesh Hashem in public, Nikol Kulei Al Shmer Shalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had this earlier on, Daf Yod. That he was called completely, his whole name includes Yehuda, including all the letters, Yud Kei Vav Kei.
And Yosef didn't
return it? It was in private. Yosef Ma'idi, Yosef Ma'idi, what exactly was the Kiddush Hashem that Yosef accomplished in private? The Pasuk says, the Pasuk in this week's parasha it is, tells us about how Potiphar's wife is trying for a long time to seduce Yosef. Finally, the Pasuk says, it happened like this day, like a certain day, that he came to the house to do his work. Now, what does that mean? It means that both of them intended an Avera. Not only Potiphar's wife was trying to seduce him into the Avera, but when Yosef came home that day, he was intending to do the Avera with her as well. And in fact, when we say Vayovei Abayi Salasis Malachta, when it says that he went into the house to do his work, Rav Shmuel, so Rav and Shmuel argue what it means. Chada Malachis Malachta Mamish, one of them says it means just Toshit his work. He had work to do around the house. The Medrash says like he had accounts to keep, and he had account books to balance, whatever. The Chada Malachis Tzrach of Nichnas, the other one says no, he went in to do his needs, to have relations with her. Now, how do we get that? So Tosfos says, because that's why the pasuk says Vayovei Abayi Salasis. Vayovin Veloshin Bia. He came in intending to do Bia. Now, so we'll get to it in a minute. I mean, the pasuk continues, obviously, that he held himself back. But there's a famous question. Wait, we'll say that in a second. But wait. They asked the Rabbah. You know, usually, we always try to be Melamed Schus on the people from Tanakh. Haitachin was saying such a thing that Yosef went in there intending to do an Aveira. So he says, but that's just it. Since the pasuk continues, and the Gemara elaborates that he didn't end up doing it. So Abba, that's his shvach, that he had such a powerful yetzahara. That's a shvach for him. It's not a gnai for him. It's a shvach that he had such a powerful taira for it, and he still controlled himself.
Yeah, but he told him.
We'll see that in a second. It was still tremendous nesayim, but wait. Well, I'll tell you. I mean,
there's
a. He was afraid when it sort of stopped. No. But let's finish. I mean, there's a lot to talk about over here. I mean, among other things, so what is this? Why is he intending the Dvar Aveira? Besides what the Rabbah is saying, there's a lot of other Mephoshim talk about various other possibilities, including one very interesting one. One very interesting one is the Medrash says Bechlal. Forget about Yosef for a second. Potiphar's wife. What did she have in mind with this whole thing? Is it Sam? She just has the hearts for him. So the Medrash says that no, actually, she actually meant it in a certain way, the Shem Shemayim. Astrologically, she knew that she found that she and Yosef are destined to have descendants together. Well, knew what's the natural way for that to happen, that we'll sleep together. In the end, what happened was, how did it come true? Yosef ended up marrying Osnath, who was Bas Potiphera, the daughter of Potiphar. That's what we were talking about when you asked me before at the beginning, that the prophet says she was the daughter of Potiphera, which is another name for Potiphar. So either some of the Pharisees say she was a natural daughter, the Medrash says she was a stepdaughter, whatever it is, therefore, so yes, in a certain sense, it came true. She is Potiphar's wife, and Yosef did end up having descendants together, but not in the way that she thought. Anyway, so therefore, the idea...
Yes, it'd be a real woman.
No, it doesn't matter. If you raise a Yosef in your house, the Gemara says it's considered as if you gave birth to them. But one way of looking at it is why did they want Lasset Tzrochav? Because he figured, you know what, if that's destiny, then okay, you know, I got to go along with it.
So one second, she knew that they would have descendants together, but yeah. He didn't?
No, that's the thing. If she's trying to convince him of that, okay, you know what, if that's what it is, then that's what it is. Wait, we'll talk about it in a little bit. Anyway, okay. Plus it continues, Ein ish me'an she'abayis, but none of the people of the house were there. So what do you mean, she'abayis, gober, kvesa, shalaisa, rosha, lahi, ba'ish? In that entire huge mansion of that rosha, Potiphar, there was not a single other person there. Tanad, ve'gab, shmol, oysa, yem, yem, chagam, ha'yem, no, well, that day was a goyish holiday. V'hol, chukulun, ve'is, avadis, l'chavim, shalem, so everybody went to their temple of Avodah Zarah, v'hiyam, alam, choylehi, where she claimed she didn't go, she claimed I'm sick. Omra, because she thought to herself, you know what, there's no better time to get Yosef to finally give in now when nobody else is around to stop us. The pasuk continues, she grabbed him by his clothes and said, Sheikh Vahimi. At that moment, the image of his father came and appeared in the window. So Tosfos says, how do we know that? Because if the pasuk is saying "Ein ish me'an she'abayis shom ba'bayis," there was no person of the people of the household, implies that there was somebody else there who was not a member of the household. Who? Yaakov. Tosfos Shantz, by the way, brings a very odd medrash that "Ein ish" also means what about Yosef himself? Is an ish, isn't he? No, actually, what happened was he found at that moment he found that he's a tumtum. He has no milah. He doesn't have an aver. Like it shrank back into his body, I guess. Like anyway.
You mean his foreskin came back?
No, not his foreskin. No, like his aver as a whole, the whole aver, like retracted into his body, kind of. So like yeah. Okay. Anyway. Yaakov said to him, Yosef, in your future, your brother's names are going to be written on the stones of the Ephod, you're supposed to be among them. Do you want your name is going to be erased from their company, but he called it Roya Zonis, and also that you're going to be called somebody who frequents Zonis? And the pasuk says, Roya Zonis, somebody who frequents Zonis loses a fortune, so you're going to lose. The Rashi says that Hoin means shame too, which Yaakov would call Hoin. good name is better than all the fortunes in the world. You're going to lose the good name of being with Kama Eifoy. Marshall says another possibility how Hoin comes to mean that the stones of Eifoy. We know the famous story of Dhamma ben the Sinner, where they had to pay a fortune when they had to replace one of the stones of the Choshen or the Eifoy, whatever it was. So literally, each stone is worth a fortune. And the Peshel of Krakow and Hanukkah the Torah brings an interesting idea. We just said before that a hay was added to Yosef's name once he passed this test. And also, that we know that on the Choshen, besides for the names of the 12 Shvatim, it also said, we learned in Yom, it said Abram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and it said Shifte Yeshurun, and Shifte Ka, there's different Yosef, in order to have all 22 letters of the Aleph-Bays. The Chizkuni writes that they arranged it, each stone had six letters on it. So for example, the stone was Reuben. Reuben is five letters, so there was a letter Aleph from Abraham's name. But the stone was Shimon, there was a Beis from Abraham's name, and so forth, going through all their words. So it comes out that on the stone with Yosef, there was supposed to be Vav Nun, the last two words of the word Yeshurun. So therefore, Yaakov is telling him, if you don't pass this test, you're going to lose the Hey from Yehoshef, and the Vav Nun from that would be written by your name with the Efer. That's the Oin that you're going to lose. Miyatsu, immediately, Vatesha Ve'esan Kashte. Immediately, as the Pasuk later says, Yaakov tells him in his bracha, his bow, as in like a bow and arrow, stayed strong. What does that mean? Amar Rav Yechon, Mishum Rav Meir, Sheshova Kashte Ve'esan. It means that his keshes, which metaphorically means it's Shechach Zera, because it shoots like an arrow, stayed back. It went back to normal. He controlled himself. Marshal says also Kashta is Moloshan Tishu, he had an erection. By the way, so Rabbi Yonis and Ibershitz asked an interesting question. When Yaakov is coming to him, and Yonis must Yoiknoi, and told, why is he telling him that you're not going to be written on the Ephod? Is that the most serious consequence of being involved with Ephod's wife? What about he's going to lose Adam Haba? All kinds of other terrible things. Why is he focusing on this? He says, based on this idea that we just said, that Potiphar's wife figured that astrologically it's destined that we're going to have descendants together, and Yosef is about to go along with that. So Yaakov tells him like this, you know what, fine, granted, but you know what, astrology is always, whenever astrologers come up with a prediction, as we learned in the first paragraph, there's always some detail of it that's unclear, that they don't quite get right. In this case, Potiphar's wife is getting it wrong. It wasn't going to be her, it was going to be her daughter that was going to have children with Yosef. So now, the Urim V'Tumim is not like that. The Urim V'Tumim gives a perfect answer every time, a 100% guaranteed correct answer. If you're going to say that astrology is correct and therefore you should be with Potiphar's wife, you have no need for the Urim V'Tumim. But your name doesn't deserve to be on him.
What about the
Chiruch? Ah, so one idea is when we say that Nirus Adjumus Yechne Shalaviv, one idea is he himself brought it up in his own mind that, you know what, I have a father, I have a Yaakov. The Arachaim HaKadosh actually says an interesting thing. At the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim, the Pasuk says, Ish imei v'aviv tiro v'eshav sofei tishmoro. A person should fear his mother and father and keep Shabbos. What's the connection? He says, besides the connection, Rashi says that if your father tells you to violate Shabbos, you don't listen, etc. The Arachaim HaKadosh says another connection. If you're in danger of breaking Shabbos or any other mitzvah, think of the image of your father in your mind. And that'll help prevent you from the Avera. As we see over here, is what happened to Yosef.
So he brought it to his own mind then.
Also, there's an idea that we say, that Rashi says at the beginning of this week's parasha, show you Zivi Kunin Shaloi Joma, that Yosef looked like Yaakov. So it could be he saw his own reflection in the window, and that reminded him all of a sudden of Yaakov. The pasuk continues after this Vatesha Beis and Kashtay. The pasuk continues by a Foyzer Zroya Yoda. Literally means his hands were covered with gold. But the Gemara darshens it. Not Yoda Vatarka. That Yosef, he still has this tremendous passion. He has this tremendous history. What does he do? He stuck his hands into the ground like to stand like almost on all fours. And that way it would be uncomfortable. And that would help. That would help get rid of his passion. And halacha, actually, if it happens, if a couple is having relations and then the woman is roya dam during kashmish, you're supposed to do that. You can't withdraw at that point. Hanah could be off there, whatever the Gemara talks about in Shavuos, but you have to kind of support yourself, balance yourself on your hands and feet until things calm down. So that's how you did that over here. The yotza shichvas zarim meant sipone yoda. The shichvas zera came out from between the nails of his fingers. So one of the Gaonim writes in a Tshuva doesn't mean literally, I mean Shechva Zera doesn't come out from the finger, it comes out from Eber. It means like it's just metaphorically, it means his passion was so intense, like burst out all over. The pasuk continues, "Migei Avir Yaakov," from the hands of the powerful one of Yaakov, "Mi," which means "Mi Godem Loishi Yichokok Alav Me'Efrid." What brought it about that in the end Yosef's name is written on the stones of Efrid? "Ela Avir Yaakov," only the power of Yaakov. And the pasuk continues, "Misham Roya Even Yisrael," from there the stone of the the shepherd of the stone of Yisrael, meaning "Misham Zocha V'Nasa Roya." Based on that, based on passing this Nisroyan, Yosef had the schus to become a Roya, to become the shepherd, the one who sustained the Jewish people. Shenema, Roya Yisrael Hazina, as the pasuk says, until him, we address the Hevishu, the shepherd of Yisrael, listen, Noye Katsoin Yosef, who leads Yosef, meaning the Jewish people collectively, like sheep. So in other words, we Jewish people collectively are called Yosef's sheep, and Yosef is the shepherd. Tanya, and in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Hoya Roya Yosef, lots of men did this shvatim, Pedershiyat, and Yaakov of it. By right, Yosef should have had 12 shvatim come from him, just like came from Yaakov. Shenema El Tilbus Yaakov Yosef, that would have been another similarity between them. El Shiyat, so Shechazer invents Sipona Yoda, but we just said his Shechazer came out from his fingertips, so he lost that opportunity. And we've got to go to Meir, but we'll continue tomorrow, that nevertheless, instead, Binyamin had 10 sons, and that made up for the 10 other sons that Yosef should have had. Thank you.